Neighborhoods, a black perspective, 1900 to present. I'm James Johnson of the Afro-American Educators Association, interviewing Mr. Dewey Amos of 871 Chopsey Hill Road on Thursday, October the 20th at 5:10 p.m. Mr. Amos, would you tell me something about your birthplace and your immediate family?
Well, I was born in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, on May the 25th, 1908. And the name of the street that I was born on was named of Dewey Street. That's after my name. And we lived in Winston-Salem until I was at the age of about 10 years old. Then my parents, due to the fact that we couldn't get a proper education in the South where we were living at the time, my mother decided that she wanted her children to have a better education than she had when she was there. So she insisted on my father bringing us to a place where we could get a better education. In the meantime, the World War I hadn't been too long over after 1917 when it ended. And an uncle of mine came up to Connecticut on a job because there were fellows coming into the South looking for workers to come north to work in the plants here. So my uncle came up here in 1921. And after being here for a short while, he wrote my mother and asked if she could let my older brother come up here to get a job. About a year after this, after my brother worked here with my uncle, he came home for a vacation, and he brought two of my sisters to Connecticut just for summer vacation. They stayed during the whole summer, and before it was time for them to go back home, an aunt of mine that was here put my sisters in school. So after they got in school here, I think they went to Walthersville. They began to write my mother and told them how nice it was how good the teachers were here, and that they would like to live here. My mother told my father when he came home at night, she says, "I would like for you to ask your boss if he could transfer you up north where you could get where your children could get better education, because at the place where we were living we only got about 4 months schooling a year." So my father made arrangement with this company that he was working with there, the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, and to be transferred to Akron, Ohio. So my father asked for the transfer, and it was granted. But in the meantime, my mother says, "Let's come into Bridgeport first, where my children are, the two girls are, and take them with us when we go to Akron." So when we came to Bridgeport, my brother, who was here with my uncle, they had furnished off a 7-room house on Clarence and Kossuth Street, where they had arranged for us to come and live in, unbeknown to the family. And they had also got a job for my father that worked in Salt Textile, a place where they made fabrics on Kossuth Street, about one block from where the house was. So when my father came in, they showed him the house and showed him that they had furnished the house so lavishly for us, 7 rooms, because it was 9 of us came here from North Carolina at the time. When the family moved here, 9 of us came. The two girls who were here already made 11, but 9 came from down home.
What year was this?
This was 1922. We got to Bridgeport. So after being here that long, my uncle and my brother had got my father a job at Salt Textile, as I have said. And my mother stated to my father, "Now that the children have went so far as to do this much for us to get us established, They want to know, why don't we stay here for a while and you notify the people in Akron that you'll come out at a later date. So my father stated, well, since they have did this for us, I will try working here for a while. So everything was going along fine here in Bridgeport for us. At that time, money was pretty good because after the war was over, they needed work so bad that the wages were pretty high. And there was two of the rooms that we didn't use too much because we didn't even five of them good, in fact. Because my uncle had another part of the house, and they had four rooms, and some of us children were staying with them. So there was two fellows who wanted to live without, you know, they came here too, they didn't have any place to stay. They wanted to live, if my mother would fix them lunches and take care of their laundry, and they would pay her handsomely to help out. So these are the two rooms that we didn't need. We rented them out to these two fellas, and they stayed with us about 2 years or more. And Sawyer's Textiles began to get a little slow. Business began to get drop off. And further than that, when we first came to Bridgeport, I got a little ahead of my story, things weren't like they are today. People that were here were mostly foreigners. And the elderly people couldn't speak English. It was mostly Italians in the neighborhood in which I lived, Italian and Polish. So we children used to go to each family's house and eat. They'd come to my house and everything was just like down home, even better. We were glad because down home we all blacks had to stick together, but up here white boys coming to my house and I go in their house, my mother fixing for them and their mother fixing for us. And only the children speak good English. So later years, when other people began to migrate here from jobs in the South, a lot of white people migrated here too. And then as we grew up a little older, getting a little older, things seemed to change. The friendly atmosphere that we had prior to the immigration of other people here, the children began to get a little reluctant. We didn't go to each other's house so much. Or they didn't come to mine and didn't even invite me to theirs. And as we grew, even when we got up to where we graduated in grade school, elementary school, it got so we were sort of far apart. It wasn't like it was when we first got here. And it seemed he kept getting worse. And we didn't have the same transportation that we have here now. We had small jitney buses. I guess about 10 people could ride on a little jitney bus, and there was quite a number of them. And the streets weren't paved. They were cobblestone, mostly cobblestone. And the best record, well, we had a lot of recreation. We had ball games. We had even, Bridgeport had a baseball team called the Bridgeport Bears. And that's some of the things that I'm trying to recall that we did. Then we had, when the tides used to, water used to come in tides, sometimes the water would be so high here in Bridgeport that it would come almost way up Broad Street, up almost near Fairfield Avenue.
That's how
water used to flood, come up, until they started putting up ballers and things down by the sound to hold the water back. And also at that time when we came here, Barnum and Bailey had a circus lot down on Norman and Railroad Avenue. There's a big lot there. And that lot, part of that land now belongs to Bassett High School. I think they have a play lot over there for the fellows that go practice football, whatever it is.
Wentfield.
Yeah, that's where they played baseball, and then that was always around there on Sunday. The families all from around Bridgeport used to go down there for outings or recreation. After leave Seaside Park, we'd come over there and watch them bring the horses out, especially when they're getting ready to get on, Barnum Bailey getting ready to get on the road again. They'd bring the horses out and be practicing training with them over there. Not too many of the animals here were here. because most of the animals went to a warmer climate, but the horses in particular. And then they had a building right where they used to keep the wagons, and they used to paint them and make them decorated. It was right on Norman Street, a big building on Norman and Railroad Street. Railroad Avenue is where they had these wagons. But other than that, when we came from, when we came here otherwise, there was weren't too many black families here after the business began to fall off. The people who came here, only about 8 black families were on the east end, east side where I live. The east end is on across the bridge over by the Business Street and all that. That was the east end. We were on the east side around Kasut and Clarence Street in that section. Well, after business began to fall off bad, and a lot of the people who came here transportation that were brought here to work just for a period of time in the shops. When the shops began to get slow, those people went back. But the stabilized families in Bridgeport were no more than about 8 families on the east side. The east end, there were more because they were some people here who had used to work in private families. And while they were here, they bought property on Business Street, Newfield Avenue, in that section. So there were the biggest number of blacks were here, lived in that section, Newfield Avenue and Business Street, in that section of town. Well, on my side of town, there were about 8 families. In fact, Bridgeport didn't have too many black people when we came here. And as the younger fellows first grew up, there wasn't, as I mentioned, the discrimination among us. It wasn't as bad. It was very good, because you used to have fairs where they used to have block dances near the firehouse. They used to have block dances. And in the summer, they have a band out there, and everybody coming to dance in the street or dance near the firehouse. And it was used to be beautiful. But today, I mean, since that time, it just showed the shape we things did change. The tougher the people seemed to be in need, looked like that when people were close together. When people began to get a little more, that's when everybody began to divide. If somebody bought a better house, especially the white people living in a black neighborhood, blacks living in a neighborhood where they were mixed, the whites were the first thing to do to get out there as quick as they could, because it seemed that their atmosphere had changed. Some of them had got a little better education, and some of them probably had married a person that didn't like black people, and they want to get out and separate from the others. And a lot of people, if they were Italians, they didn't want to marry another Italian. They would have married an Irishman, a Jewish person, or anybody else. They don't want another Italian. And after they did get in a position where they could better themselves, they didn't even want another Italian living near him. So they discriminated even against each other.
You know why that was?
It's because seemed like they were ashamed of their own people. So you mean, and that's what I could never understand. There was a story I heard of one of the fellows was working with me at when I began to work a little bit. I haven't got through high school yet. His brother bought a house, and they had built, and he didn't like the house where he's living, so he sold the house to another Italian fellow. So the Italian fellow who bought the house wasn't happy because he bought the house beside another Italian. See, and he figured that was like you're making me feel cheap, because you put me beside another Italian person. Now, in the first, he didn't take under consideration that he didn't have to buy that house. But now, I'll go back to when I was after leaving elementary school. I was working, as I said, I had always did a little something.
Where were you in elementary school?
I was in the Waltersville School. I went out to Waltersville School. I lived on Kasut Street at the time. And while I was working in elementary school, going to elementary school, I had a little job. A tailor saw me one day playing in the street for the police, kids playing ball. And he asked me if I would like to work in his store. And I says, I would like to work for you. I said, but you have to ask my mother. He says, well, if you'd like to work for me, he says, I'll pay you $6 a week and you come in after school and I'll give your mother the $5 and I'll give you $1 on a Sunday morning when you come to the store to make sure you put out the barrels that gotta be taken up on Monday morning. So he says, I said, well, I can't accept the job. I said, my mother, there's on the stoop, she's down there sewing. I said, well, you go down and ask her, maybe she'll let me work for you. So we went over and he made the agreement with my mother. And sure enough, we did, I went to work for him. After school, I'd come up to his store. He had an apartment building in the back of the store on East Main Street. And when I come from school and have him put on, change my clothes, I'd go out and I'd take care of the apartment building because people lived back there. We'd throw trash in the barrel or sometimes miss the barrels and have to straighten out the barrels and everything. Then he had a big basement cellar. He made sure that I kept the cellar cleaned. And I began to dislike the job because I was always down the cellar, dirty work, you know. So he says, and one day he says, when you get things sort of straightened up down here, I'll take you up in the store. So I was glad to hear that because up in the store was nice. So I thought that was going pretty good. And he finally took me upstairs to his tailor shop. And he says, now you clean up here. And then after he says, we get everything going good, he says, I'm going to teach you how to sew. So first time he gave me the lesson, he said, now here's what you do. He just gave me a piece of cloth and a needle and a thread and showed me what he wanted me to do. Well, I tried to sew, but I never sewed with a thimble. So he said, well, you won't be able to sew until you learn how to use a thimble. So he put the thimble on my finger and told me, he said, now you gotta sew with a thimble, otherwise you'll never be able to sew. So little by little, I got so I was pretty good by hand sewing. Then he showed me how to do shaping, showed me how to make collars, showed me how to do vests and pants. I got along pretty good. In the meantime, he had a son that was going to Yale University. Now, I'm getting ready almost to graduate grade school, elementary school. I'm getting ready for Harding High. So he says, now, you're going to go to school. He says, you're going to have nice clothes. He says, I like for you to look nice. He says, and wait, he says, you'll be like an aunt in my business when you start going to high school. So every time he make a suit for his son that was going to Yale, his son was going to be an engineer from Yale. He'd put a suit in to be made up for me. Well, when I graduated Walsenville School and started high school, I had 7 tailor-made suits. So.
About what year was this that you started?
1926. I'm the original graduate from Harding High School. We went in 26 and came out in 30. He made me. Every time he'd make a suit for himself, he'd put one in the works for me. I had 7 tailor-made suits, and I was classified when I graduated Harding. They called me the glass of fashion and mold of form. So all the teachers liked me. I had the best characteristics of best liked, best dressed, and most accommodating. That was some of the characteristics they gave me. So that I was proud of that. But what I was more interested in when I was with the tailor, I was supposed to become a dentist. That was my ambition, to become a dentist. But during the course of time, things got a little tough for my father, and being a big family, it was sort of tough for my father to carry the load, you know, for me to go to school. They had a little money, but if I had went for dentistry, I would have to be obligated to the rest of my family until they got out of school. So I took that under consideration, and I told Pa, I said, now, you don't have enough money to send me to school. I said, if I had been able to go, had an application in going to dentistry school in Washington, if I could have got 1 year, first year, I would have a chance when I become a sophomore to work. But they wouldn't let you work as a freshman. You had to make a mark for yourself first. So since that fell through, and working along with Taylor like I was, I worked back with my old man. When I graduated, I went back to work with the Taylor. I never did stop, in fact. I worked with Taylor practically full time. And I was learning to almost make practically a whole suit. And, but I wasn't, didn't take it to heart like I wanted, because originally I wanted to be a dentist. I could have learned much more of the trade than I did if I had known I had to be a tailor. But I thought I was going to be a dentist. And after that fell out, I said, well, I worked with a tailor, but my heart wasn't in it. I still thought I could become a dentist. So then things got a little bad. My father had just bought a house, and he needed help. So I was working. My tailor that I was working with, as soon as I got so much better, improving myself, he was an elderly man. He had lost his wife, and he was living with his daughter up in the North End on Savoy Street. And the daughter got married and went to live in Pennsylvania. And he had fell down the stairs one day. I came from the work, and I got in touch with the people in the store down underneath him. It was just to be a grocery store. They got in touch with his daughter in Pennsylvania, and she came up here and took him back home with her, because he was an elderly man, and he never did open the store anymore again. And then they sold everything out. But I didn't have arrangements with him before he left, but what he did for me, he made arrangements for another tailor, Wilson and Rossini, used to be on Cannon Street, the biggest tailor shop in Bridgeport. He made arrangements for them to give me a little job over there. So I went and worked for Wilson and Rossini, and I was making, at that time, things fell off so much, I was making more money than my father. I was getting $35 a week and going to high school. I hadn't finished high school yet. I was getting $35 a week and going to high school.
And this is during the Depression you're talking about?
Yeah, not up to the Depression yet. Okay. This is in the 20s, late 20s, 28s. Oh, and when Wilson Russing, the father died, the son took over the business. And the son didn't take care of the business at all, so it went to pop, like, you know. Business went so bad that Wilson Russell had to close. And in those days, that company, you were paying $225 for a suit then. Now, you know, that was lots of money back then, and things were getting a little tight too. Then if you're coming up to, in the 20s, up around 1929, that was my last year of high school. And I was living on, still on Kasuk Street. And my father had bought the house on High Street. And I didn't want to leave Harding. So Mr. Hedges at that time, he was the principal. So as a rule, when you leave one neighbor, you gotta go to the next district, you gotta go to a different school. So I went and I told Mr. Hedges, I said, now if I got to transfer, I says, to Central, because I'm on that side, I said, I'd rather quit school. I'm so familiar with my teachers and with my class, and this is my last year coming up. So he says, well, we won't bother with that. He says, you stay on and graduate here. That's what I did. I stayed and graduated from Harding. And after I graduated from Harding, and Wilson and Russell had closed, and all the while I was working, all while I was in school, I never had no time off. You know, with a big family, you things that other boys could do, I couldn't do. I belonged to the track team in Harding, and I belonged to the inter-rooms basketball. That's all I could do. The coach got mad at me because I wouldn't play football because I could run fast. And, you know, being as he seen me on the track team, he would like for me to be an in or something like the other fellows, you know. But I couldn't afford to play like these other fellas. I says, I told them I come from a big family and I have my father too. So when he told me a couple of times, he says he thought I was sort of scared. But I wasn't that I was afraid of anything. It was because I couldn't afford to play and lose the help I was getting my parents. So later on in later years, after I couldn't go to, money couldn't, wasn't raised up for me, enough money wasn't raised coming in my father's house for me to go to college. I stopped and then I began to court. That's when I met my wife.
Where?
In right here in Bridgeport. When I first came to Bridgeport as a kid, I'll come up to that now. Young boy, I was 11 years old, I went to Messiah Baptist Church and I saw this little girl there. And I kept my eye on that little girl all through. That's God's truth. She got into high school and she graduated high school ahead of me. And then one time I met her, I wanted to go to a dance. We had a fella that was staying at our house and he wanted my mother let me go to a dance with him one night. And I wanted to go back because I know this girl was going to be there. There would just be YWCA on Beach Street. So my mother said, no, says, I don't want him going down dancing. So she says, well, if you be careful and you supervise him, you chaperone him, all right, I'll let him go. I was glad because that girl was there and her mother was there.
Where did she live? How far did she live?
I lived on High Street. We had moved on High Street. I lived on High Street and she lived on Highland Avenue. So we went to dance that night and her mother came with her. And her mother was a strict looking woman, you know. So this fella who lived at our house, he went and asked her to dance and he was dancing with her and everything. And I got mad. Because he was definitely, he looked like he laid his head on her head, you know. So I said, when he came back, he said, aren't you going to dance? I says, I don't know how to dance. He said, you don't know how to dance? What'd you come to dance for? I said, I came because she was going to be here, you know. And I tried to talk to her and her mother. Every time the mother looked at me, I tried to, scared to go over there. So finally, I got my nerve made up and I went and asked her for a dance. And we started dancing. I was ashamed. I was stepping all over the girls' feet and everything. So later on, later years, later times, after we getting to see each other a little often, I used to go when she was at the Y, I used to go and walk her home. And then the Y used to give dances. When the Y gave dances, I would go and all the other girls from the Y see me coming, they'd move and she'd still be there. So finally she stayed until I learned how to dance pretty good. And later on, when I knew how to dance, she says, why don't you dance with some of those girls over there? See, years ago when you came here, there was a lot of people worked in private family. You had Sunday off and every Thursday off and every other Sunday off. And they used to run dances, have basketball games and dances on those two nights. Now, like a New York team used to come up here and play the Bridgeport team. And they played all around, even around the state here they played too. But when they, the big nights was when the New York teams coming in to play because they bring busloads of people up. Well, a lot of these girls who worked in service, they come to these dances and they be sitting around all, and they don't know nobody. And my wife used to say, my girlfriend used to say, those girls come all dressed up for their dance and nobody's dancing. Well, why don't you dance with them? Because I didn't have to worry about her. All it was dancing with her, you know. She had all the dances she wanted. So she said, dance with those girls. So I started going around. I said, now I'm going to start dancing on this end and meet all you girls. And I made the girls have a good time. I enjoyed it. So it went on like that until eventually I decided that I'd like to get married. I was married when I got married April 20th, 1931. And I've just been out of high school about a year, you know, but I've been working all through high school, saving a little money, but it wasn't enough to do what I needed to do. And she was working. She was the elevator operator in one of the department stores downtown.
Which one?
Makes department store. It was on the Main and Fairfield Avenue. So she even, after I got married, she wanted to me to try to get back in school and she would help me. But she wasn't making any money. Every time she dressed herself, the little money they would make, the girls were making in those days, wasn't hardly anything. So she says, I will help you. I said, no. I says, we won't try to do that now. Well, anyway, I always tried to work to have a little something. So after we got married, my father and his brothers, they had a aunt, my father's aunt,